Welcome to Insight Analog Photography Radio Program. I'm your host, Scott Shepard, and of course, the Insight Analog Photography Radio Program is all about traditional process photography. We talk about instant photography. We talk about black and white. We talk about color film. We talk about dry plate, wet plate, you name it, alternate printing processes, everything going on in analog photography. And of course, the Insight Analog Photography Radio Program is brought to you by Fujifilm over at www.fujifilmusa.com/professional, making life more colorful. Our friends at Richard Photo Lab, www.richardphotolab.com, DR5, www.dr5.com, Iger Studios, check them out, igerstudios.com, and of course, Upstrap at upstrap-pro.com. Our media partners, www.apug.org, the Analog Photography User Group, the community for analog photography, our photographic philanthropy partner, George Eastman House International Museum of Photography and Film, www.geh.org. Today on Inside Analog Photo, we're going to be here with Scott DiSabato. Scott is the Pro Film Marketing Manager from Eastman Kodak, and we're going to be talking today about the recent announcement that Kodak has done last week in regards to some consolidation of films, how things are going, what they're looking like moving forward, and of course, all of the things that are going on with Eastman Kodak and their pro film imaging department. Scott, how are you doing today?
Scott, I'm doing great. I appreciate the time today.
Thanks for joining us here on Inside Analog Photo to discuss some of these things that have been going on with Eastman Kodak and some mix-up in the black and white arena. So we wanted to chat today about your announcement earlier in the week in regards to the Tri-X 320 in medium format. So I guess you can just get us up to speed. What's been going on with that?
Oh, certainly. I guess the first thing I'd like to say is that Kodak is still manufacturing Tri-X film. In fact, it's among our most popular films, if not the most popular film that we make. So just to be clear, we are no longer going to be producing the 320 TXP Tri-X product in medium format. There is still a supply of product that is available, and we expect it to be in the marketplace until the March, possibly April timeframe. But just to sort of bottom line the business situation here is that these formats accounted for less than 5% of our total Tri-X production. And when the marketplace and photographers vote, if you will, based on the sales that we see of certain catalog numbers, we can no longer sustain those catalog numbers. And we do that, frankly, for the good of the overall portfolio. We want to make sure that each product we make is carrying their own weight and the film continues to be very attractive to the company that way. So while we've discontinued those two products, and again, they accounted for less than 5% of all of our production, we are still making TXP 320 in sheet film sizes. We probably had the opportunity to take a look at revising those emulsions, but it makes perfect sense that a lot of large format photographers have created photographic systems around their large format film emulsion. So we left that untouched. But the bottom line there is that it's a much more popular film than that emulsion was in medium format. So Kodak is still making a Tri-X emulsion in medium format. We will still continue to make the TX-400, the Tri-X 400, in 120 format, and that was significantly more popular than the 320 emulsion was. And that really is what has driven the change. And then, of course, one of our all-time favorite and most popular films is Tri-X 400 in 35mm, and that continues unchanged. So again, there really has not been a dramatic change in our offerings, and we basically went with the way the industry and the marketplace was voting relative to their preference for medium format emulsion. So again, like I said, the 320 is still in the pipeline, if you will. So there's an opportunity for people to grab the last of that up over the next several weeks. And maybe we can talk a little bit about the differences in TXP versus TX.
I think that's the next thing here is let's really talk about the Tri-X 320 is really a studio film, correct?
Yeah, I think if we go back, this film is more than 50 years old now, and I think that's why there's been quite a bit of excitement about anything associated with the name Tri-X and the fact that Kodak will no longer be finishing any of those items. It gets a very strong reaction, so that's why I want to just try to be real clear here. But yeah, the difference historically has been that TXP stands for Tri-X Professional. It was rated at 320, and from a characteristic standpoint, it had a slightly softer contrast, a little bit flatter contrast, and it was ideal for portraiture. because of that lower contrast position. Just the same way we have color negative films and the ones that are oriented more towards portraiture are lower in contrast, and because it's color, lower in saturation typically too. Now, 50 years ago, that's the way these films were treated. So the TXP 320 has a slightly different contrast position, but the grain structure itself is very similar, if not identical, to the grains that are grown for the TX. It's just the way the emulsion is finalized that creates a different characteristic curve there. And then for many years, the TXP also had a pelloid coating that had a tooth to it that would allow for negative retouching, very much the same way we had with our color negative films. So it had the backing so you could do spotting and negative retouching, and that is the primary difference. So if you really look at it, the TXP was considered professional and kind of a portrait-oriented emulsion historically. The TX was more kind of pictorial type of emulsion that was optimized for.
Do you find, Scott, that with the availability of so many different ways to process your black and white film, that you can take the Tri-X 400 and sort of replicate what you got out of the 320 in regards to the curve and the toe and the heel? Is there ways to alter development, chemical processing, to use the current stock in a fashion to achieve something of the similar look that you would get from the 320?
Yeah, and probably the best way to go about that would be probably to get on our website and download the technical publications for both TX and TXP. And you'll notice there that there are different combinations of temperature, developers, development times, where you achieve different contrast positions. And there are ways to make Tri-X lower in contrast due to incorporating less energy, whether it's temperature, dilution, or agitation, to soften the contrast a little bit. And so probably the best way, because everybody's system's a little bit different, would be to maybe look at those characteristic curves and try to manage it in a way based on your capability if you're developing at home or if you send your film out, to flatten that out a little bit. But basically you would take something away in development to flatten it out a bit, whether it's the way you agitate or the temperature potentially or the time in development. So there's certainly a way to achieve that look. But again, I think from a grain structure standpoint, you're going to find it to be very, very similar. And again, most of the people that were shooting medium format already had the preference towards Tri-X 400, and that's a big part of the reason the decision was made.
Let's chat about this whole issue in regards to 220 format and how that compares to 120 offerings. And I think a lot of people need to be informed in regards to actually manufacturing 220 is not just the same thing as 120 with less paper on it.
Yeah, that's true. There's a whole lot of components that go into 220. In fact, Kodak is the only black and white manufacturer that makes a 220 emulsion. But if you've ever developed a 120 or 220, you'll notice that 120 has paper backing the entire way, backing the film, whereas 220 only has it at the beginning and the end. So there's lots of different nuances. Every film has its own custom backing paper. And that certainly adds to the complexity in terms of managing the 220 portfolio. But 220 really is a very, very dominant format in the United States. Elsewhere in the world, it is not used very much. Certainly, it could be argued all day long, it's very convenient for a photographer to use 220. But I think the good news is that all the camera systems out there that can accommodate 220, for the most part, are able to accommodate 120. So if you are in love with a particular emulsion, chances are you'll be able to get close with a 120 version of that product. So as we've seen demand fall for 220 in the United States, that's affected our ability to offer the product worldwide. Very much the same way that 5x7 film was very, very popular in Europe. And when we saw the sales take a pretty sharp dip some years ago out of Europe, that impacted our ability here in the United States to offer as many 5x7 emulsions as we had at one point in time. So we're doing all we can to be really efficient under the lower volumes that we see, but at some point comes a time where it's just a real struggle to manufacture this stuff. And really what we're trying to optimize for is the entire portfolio of color reversal film, of black and white film, and color negative film. And we want to make sure that each individual SKU is kind of pulling its weight. I know a lot of people tell us to take an overall big picture look at things, and we certainly do, and this is actually part of that.
Well, I think people don't understand that you just can't whip up a batch of Tri-X 320 in medium format, because 120 and 220 is really a different base stock, so you're talking two different runs of emulsions, And I think people don't understand the complexity and the amount of volume that needs to be created when you make a run of films. So it's not like you can just kick some off and it'll sit on the shelf for a few years and sell it. I think the stuff goes bad because you have to make so much of it and nobody's buying it. So then the stuff goes bad and you end up throwing away three quarters of it.
Yeah, I mean, that is one of the challenges with a product like film, is that you might be able to make it efficiently by doing longer runs. But ultimately, you could pay for that by not being able to sell it through, and that's one of the challenges that we face. I think the company used to definitely subscribe to efficiency based on larger runs, and in the heyday, that worked out very, very nicely. Since that time, we've really looked internally at trying to be more and more and more efficient, and that's why we've moved all the black and white films over to our most modern filmmaking facility. In fact, the most modern filmmaking facility in the world under any company's watch. And it's known excitingly as Building 38, but it has allowed us to do shorter runs more efficiently and to do any runs with far less waste involved. And that has helped us keep a lot of films around under the lower volume conditions that we're experiencing. So that was a good investment that we made almost 10 years ago to move everything into Building 38.
Scott, let's talk about how these films react. So let's say I do find myself a nice supply of some Tri-X 120, 220, and 320, and I want to keep some of the stuff around. I can put it in the freezer. Is there an optimum way to store this? Is the stuff going to get bombarded by ion radiation? What's typically a shelf life for something? If I want to hold on for a project I'm working on, like you said, there's still inventory out in the channels. So consequently, if I find some, does it keep for a while? How's that work?
Well, as with everything in photography, I have to say it depends, because I can never really understand exactly what the storage conditions are going to be. But the beauty of black and white film is that it doesn't contain dyes, and dyes age and are a factor of both time and temperature, as well as humidity if the wrapper or container may have been open. So we don't have that issue of color shift, but what we do have, as you mentioned, is just the cosmic radiation that is present and around us all the time. Over time builds up a base fog, which can do two things. It can impact the film speed and can increase the apparent granularity of the film when it is developed. But those are really measured easily under scientific equipment. But I think to the human eye, keeping the film in cool storage so that heat radiation doesn't have an impact on the speed or grain structure. And where lead-lined bags and those sort of things don't really help you with airline travel, because they're just going to kick up the x-ray power to look in to examine the film. The lead line cases in this case can be helpful in terms of absorbing some of that cosmic radiation from ever reaching the film. So those are things I would suggest: cool to frozen storage, and then anything with lead could be very helpful. A long time ago, when we used to make very, very high speed or infrared type films that were very sensitive to radiation, we would actually store them in salt mines because the salt provided a protective layer for those types of films, so it wouldn't impact the speed or grain structure on those films. But we no longer do that because we're manufacturing in more of a just-in-time manner.
Well, I think, too, people need to realize that if Tri-X 320 was so popular and people were shooting as much as they say they were, then you would still be manufacturing it. It's a bottom-line economic proposition that, as a business, you have to manufacture products that people buy, and if people don't buy it, then you don't make it.
That's true, but at the same time, my heart does go out to people that probably have been shooting this film faithfully for many years, and for one reason or another are more comfortable with it or have an absolute preference for it. And when you take somebody's tool away, that's a tough thing to try to adjust for. I do think that the closest replacement to 320 is going to be TX400. But you're right, it's bottom line economics, and we got to make sure that we're able to meet the market demand, and the market clearly was in favor of other products that we make in 120 format. And I just want to sort of review for everybody that we still have a nice range of silver-based black and white products available in 120, and that leads with the Tri-X 400. We also have the T-Max 100. We also have the T-Max 400, and we also have Plus X available in 120. So certainly there's a lot of choice out there for the black and white purists in the Kodak portfolio, and I really think that they can find among those four films a great range and selection to choose from.
Oh, I definitely think so. I mean, there's a huge coverage here, and I think that if we stand back and look at it, the amount of people that are shooting medium format and working in a hybrid environment, that they can shoot the T-Max 400, or even the Tri-X 400, and due to some adjustment curves and some stuff they're doing when they're scanning their film, they can bring back these areas that you would capture with Tri-X 320 and emulate a very unique look, just like Tri-X 320, with minimal to no labor changes and everything's fine. And we have heard of a lot of people that are shooting two rolls of 120 and in the darkroom just splice them back to back and put them on the same roll as a 220. And you can still get your economical development environment by just doubling back two rolls of 120.
Yeah, I guess you could, but there's also some freedom as well. You lose some efficiency, and boy, it's nice to be looking through your lens and just connecting with the subject and not having to worry about the next roll of film that needs to be reloaded or back changed. But yeah, I think 120 offers options where if the lighting conditions change and you want to adjust for contrast and exposure based upon those changes, you're going to have an easier time doing that, much like a 4x5 photographer has the ability to optimize each shot versus 35mm photographer. So yeah, there's options.
And I really think, too, it's not all doom and gloom, and Kodak has been coming out with new stuff. I mean, of course, we have still that's pretty fresh here is T-Max 400. And I think there's even more things coming down the pike that people are going to be surprised that just because one film sort of fades to black, it's the birth of new stuff and new things coming forward. So I think the analog situation is still positive. It's growing from where it's been. I think we're on an upward swing still, and still great to shoot film, and there's new things to look forward to.
Yeah, I mean, listening to the market is a two-way street, and sometimes we're talking about issues like this. But more than not, you and I have gotten together to chat about new products that we've brought out to the market. In the black and white realm, at the end of 07, we brought out the T-Max 400, a brand new film, and the portrait films have been revamped pretty steadily over the past 6 years. And likewise, we just came out with the Ektar film in first 35 and last year in medium format as well. But we're real happy with the loyalty that we're seeing in some of the larger format areas. Medium format photographers are still using quite a bit of film, and large format photographers are very, very biased towards film almost exclusively. So we're thrilled about that. And I guess just going back to one of your earlier comments, I think that the T-Max 400 is going to be a pretty neat option. Usually when we introduce a new product, we have the people that had used the old product that have potentially issues with the new revision. The T-Max 400 launch was very, very interesting to me because it seems that everybody that used the first generation T-Max 400 tried the new T-Max 400 and liked it a lot. So we sort of retained the qualities from the people that were using the film initially, and it translated very well for them. Likewise, I've had some people that have not used that film because their initial experience with it wasn't what they were looking for. And now years later, because it was a new emulsion, they gave it a try, and whether they were using Tri-X or something else, they gave it a go, and they really, really liked what they were getting out of it. So we were able to kind of hold on to some of the first generation T-Max 400 users, and I think at the same time appeal to some people that haven't used that product, because it is the sharpest, finest grain 400 black and white film made, so it's pretty cool stuff.
It is very cool, and film is cool, and shooting film is cool, and we're lucky to have what we have. And I think if you look at the history of analog photography and film in general, right now is the best time that we have the highest quality product that you would ever find anywhere. So I think that if people stand back and really look at the whole situation, that people that are shooting film today are very lucky.
Yeah, I agree. And it could be argued that Kodak has made more and different films in the past, but I don't think we have ever made better film than we're making right now in terms of keeping some of the old emulsions around that are loved by many, but really putting brand new cutting-edge technology into our films that are keeping it very relevant in a digital and hybrid age.
This is great stuff. So, Scott, let's talk about where people find out information about your current available emulsions. You have a wealth of information on your website. Where do people go to find out what you guys are up to?
Well, if you just go to www.kodak.com/go/professional, you'll come into a page that is basically oriented for a professional photographer. But if you just go to Kodak.com and use the search option there about anything, no matter how specific, chances are you'll be able to come up with it. So all of our technical publications are available in PDF form, and I invite you to pull those down and take a look at some of that information. But again, we continue to have exciting news. Even this year, we'll have a product launch, which we'll be talking about in the next few weeks.
Yeah, this is great stuff, and I do appreciate your time today. We look forward to seeing you coming up here shortly at PMA and WPPI. And all the other great stuff that's going on. And Scott, thanks so much for joining us today to clarify Kodak's position on what's going on. and all these great products you guys continue to manufacture. Thank you so much.
Scott, thanks for your support and the opportunity.
Well, there you go. Scott DiSabato, Pro Film Marketing Manager with Eastman Kodak. There is the word from the man himself. Now everything is clarified in regards to what's going on with their recent consolidations, their commitment to black and white, and of course all analog imaging, and just a lot of great stuff going on with the folks over at Eastman Kodak. The Inside Analog Photography radio program has been brought to you by Fujifilm, making life more colorful over at www.fujifilmusa.com. Our friends at Richard Photo Lab at richardphotolab.com. DR5 over at www.dr5.com. Iger Studios over at igerstudios.com. Upstrap at upstrap-pro.com. And of course, our media partners, APUG, the Analog Photography User Group, over at www.apug.org. Our photography philanthropy partners, George Eastman House International Museum of Photography and Film, over at www.geh.org. I've been your host, Scott Shepard, here on Inside Analog Photography Radio. We'll be back next week with more great analog photography.